streets in Europe and elsewhere in the world, and you show solidarity with the Palestinian people. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Day 42 of the Israeli war on Gaza, regimes conducted new airstrikes on different parts of the besieged territory, killing at least 32 Palestinians. Latest attacks at the Jabalia refugee camp, as well as the area east of Rafah, the Al-Qarara town, east of Khan Yunis, was also struck. Death toll is now nearing 11,500. It's getting difficult to gather verified information from the Gaza war. That's because there is a communications blackout in much of the enclave. Now, since the war began, homes and hospitals have been the prime targets of the Israeli bombing campaign. Regimes also begun raiding hospitals in the past few days while they're packed with the displaced people. Israel says Hamas uses hospitals for operations. The resistance movement, though, has rejected that strongly. One of the Gaza hospitals hit hard by Israeli war is the Indonesian hospital in Beit Lahia in the northern part of the territory. Officials there say the facility is completely out of service due to a lack of supplies. They say the hospital cannot offer services despite receiving an overwhelming number of patients. There are currently over 500 patients at the hospital, while it has a total capacity of 140. That, according to the director of the facility. Health workers also say they're facing a severe shortage of basic supplies, and it comes as the hospital's also sheltering people from the nearby Jabalia refugee camp. All this taking place because of an Israeli ban on imports of food, water, medical supplies, as well as medicine into Gaza. The regime imposed a ban on the early days of the war. And now cancer patients in Gaza are no exception to regime's crippling restrictions on basic supplies like medicine. Let's take a listen to comments by two doctors and father of a patient at Turkish Palestinian Friendship Hospital. They explain how Israeli bans are affecting patients.
The situation is not only tragic, it's more than tragic. Cancer patients are a fragile group. They need a lot of care from nurses and medical teams, as well as psychological support, which we don't have now. As you all know, time is a really important factor for the life of the cancer patients. And if there was a delay in getting chemotherapy treatment, this will cause deterioration in the case. There were some cases we had to discharge and send to shelters. Unfortunately, four of these patients died because of the lack of medical care and because of the bad conditions there.
The situation is very, very, very bad in Gaza. It is a disaster situation. It is a call for the international community. Please come and save Gaza. Say something about Gaza. Do an action. You could be saying something very good. Yes, we are hearing you. Thanks to you. But really, we need you to come and take an action, to cease fire in Gaza, to stop killing of Gaza people, to stop killing of our patients, to stop killing our cancer patients.
My son has a cancer. He has a dangerous cancer. Today, he is bleeding from the rectus because the cancer mass is pushing against the muscle and the rectus. So he has been bleeding. He had an appointment to be treated in Nablus on the 8th of October, the second day of war. But unfortunately, the war started and he stayed in Gaza. Then the Turkish hospital was hit. There is no chemotherapy treatment or painkillers. I called on the Palestinian Authority, the health ministry, that I want painkillers.
Situation remains tense in the occupied West Bank as well, where Israeli forces have conducted a new attack in Jenin, a flashpoint city repeatedly targeted in the past several weeks. The regime carried out a drone strike in Jenin early Friday, killing at least five Palestinians. Nine were also wounded, but Israeli troops prevented emergency services from accessing or reaching them. Israeli troops also surrounded the city's Ibn Sina Hospital, ordering its immediate evacuation, that according to the Palestinian media. Troops also arrested several medics and clashed with Palestinians in a nearby area. Regimes deployed a large contingent of military reinforcements to Jenin. Almost 200 Palestinians have been killed throughout the occupied West Bank, either by Israeli forces or settlers since the Gaza war broke out on October 7th. From Madrid to Seoul and Sydney, people have held fresh rallies expressing solidarity with Palestinians and demanding an end to Israel's war on Gaza. Dozens of people turned out in downtown Seoul, South Korea. They held Palestinian flags chanting Free Palestine. Demonstrators displayed over 2,000 pairs of shoes and a symbolic gesture to denounce Israel's killing of civilians. In Australia, people held a candlelit vigil in the biggest city, Sydney. They mourned those killed in Gaza and denounced Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestine. To Europe, a similar rally was held in the Spanish capital, Madrid, where hundreds of students hit the streets in a show of support for Palestinians. They carried placards reading, "It is not war, it is genocide."
I'm here protesting against the genocide that the Israeli occupation is committing. 75 years of genocide, of ethnic cleansing. They're massacring people that nobody has given help to. And we're seeing how the United States and Europe are supporting the massacre, that nobody is raising any voice, and we have come out to the streets to protest because the people in the whole world are against this genocide.
German capitals also seen a pro-Palestinian rally Thursday. Participants held banners displaying no occupation, no apartheid, and stop the bombing. Since beginning of the war on Gaza, numerous rallies have been held worldwide in condemnation of the bloodshed by Israel. Joining us now for some special coverage is Mona Kandil, correspondent, joining us from Ramallah, and Mazin Akumsi, a Palestinian scientist and author, joining us from Occupy Bethlehem. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Mona, we're going to start with you to get the latest. I believe that we've heard an update with respect to fatalities from Jenin. What can you tell us about the big contingent of the Israeli military there and the way they're seizing people of Jenin?
Let's start first with these urgent news we're getting from Al-Khalil, southern the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military claimed that a Palestinian vehicle arrived at the entrance, the northern entrance of Al-Khalil, and that two Palestinians were inside this vehicle. They opened fire at Israeli soldiers were stationing at the this military checkpoint. The Israelis opened fire at the vehicle as well, and they claim they killed the neutralized those Palestinians were inside the vehicle. Neutralized means that the Israelis have shot and killed. However, we did not receive any confirmation from the Palestinian Ministry of Health whether a Palestinian or two Palestinians had been killed. However, local sources in the city of Al-Khalil affirmed that Israeli forces opened fire at a Palestinian vehicle at the northern entrance of the city of Al-Khalil. This comes one day after three Palestinians had been shot and killed also in Al-Khalil or in an area near Al-Khalil that is at the military checkpoint of the tunnels, the checkpoint between Bethlehem and Al-Quds. However, those three Palestinians were originally from Al-Khalil. One soldier has been killed, eight others have been wounded during the shooting that took place on Thursday. Let's move to the city of Jenin and its refugee camp. Palestinian Ministry of Health reported this morning that three Palestinians were killed in an aerial strike carried out by the Israeli military drone, as you have mentioned earlier. The three Palestinians, Baha Lahlouh, 23 years old, 28 years old Muhammad Fillo, as well as 34 years old Muhammad Husni, and 15 others had been wounded during the Israeli military operation to Jenin and its refugee camp that lasted for at least 10 hours. During these 10 hours, Israeli military caused destruction in the roads in the area. The Israeli forces surrounded the hospital of Ibn Sina. They tried to force Palestinian doctors out of Ibn Sina, but the Palestinian doctors refused to leave the hospital. However, the Israelis forced paramedics and in the whole of the emergency to leave the hospital, and at least two of the Palestinian paramedics had been detained from the Ibn Sina hospital.
Thank you, Mona, for that update. I want to welcome Mr. Mazin Kumsia, Palestinian scientist and author, joining us also from Bethlehem. Pardon. Hello, Mr. Kumsia. Welcome to the program. Your thoughts on the violence we're experiencing over the last 42 days and counting in Gaza, and also how that's trickled over to an increase in settler and regime force violence against Palestinians where you're at in the occupied West Bank.
What we are seeing in the West Bank is the beginnings of a repeat of what the Israelis have done in Gaza, which is a destruction of homes and properties and lives of Palestinians. Israel has declared war on all the Palestinian people, basically. No Palestinian is considered safe anywhere they care. And so Israel wants to clean the area between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean. That's a word they use, cleanse those areas, cleanse them of Palestinians, because Israel thinks that the job of 1948 was not finished yet, so they want to finish it. And they use the recent conflagration and declaration of war as an excuse to do whatever they want to, because there's no checks and balances on anything they do, and they have not only a green light, but they have green bulldozers, green weapons that are given by the U.S. to do this process.
And you know, you mentioned the U.S. There have been blowbacks on U.S. soil, both by university students, ordinary civilians pouring out in droves, condemning what Israel is doing, condemning the U.S. support for Israel as it is committing this level of violence against ordinary civilians throughout Gaza, throughout the occupied West Bank. We've seen people in the Pentagon, in the State Department, voicing objection, people basically resigning because they're against the Joe Biden's approach and his administration's approach to arming the regime against defenseless Palestinians. Your thoughts on all the protests we're seeing, the fact that it hasn't made a single iota of difference coming out of the Oval Office?
Well, I mean, it's important that this sacrifice that's happening in Gaza, it's a sacrifice at the golden god or golden calf of Zionism, a sacrifice, a burnt sacrifice of the children of Gaza is waking up a lot of people and making people very uncomfortable. Even people in the elites of the U.S. State Department and the military and others, it's making them start to think that maybe, I mean, we knew Israel was violent. We Palestinians have a 75-year experience with Israel as a genocidal regime. But the intensity and the level of the habri of attacking hospitals, attacking schools, attacking people lining up at bread-buying facilities, destroying even the only remaining functioning mill today that produces flour in Gaza, you know, bombing that. This audacity of attacks is making a lot of people uncomfortable. This is what I think is a positive aspect of this, that Israel has gone so far beyond the pale. I mean, I do not even know if the U.S., which is also horrible, wanted to occupy Iraq and killed so many hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, if they ever denied water or food to a whole city in Iraq, like Baghdad or Mosul. So even by historical standards, Israel has exceeded its master, basically the U.S. They have exceeded them in the level of atrocities. And the U.S. continues to hold the number one record historically, but that's because they have been at it for much, much longer than the state of Israel, whether in Vietnam or elsewhere. But certainly Israel is trying to compete to get into the world record Guinness Book of World Records of atrocities and genocide.
And Mr. Kumsia, many feel that the regime with Joe Biden's backing is unleashing a misinformation campaign against Palestinians, against the atrocities taking place in Gaza, trying to justify what they're doing, their actions and activities with respect to the Palestinians in Gaza. Are they being successful, or do you think that the world is more aware and has caught them in this, in the midst of their misinformation attempts?
Well, what wars do is usually have unpredictable consequences. And we saw this with the American wars in the Middle East. They couldn't control the outcome. They usually, those belligerent states, as we call them, don't have any plans for what will happen. They haven't thought of contingency plans and so forth. So they end up doing a lot of mistakes and miscalculations about outcomes. And many times it ends up backfiring on them. So we're hoping that this is also the case here. We're seeing some of this, as you point out, this backlash that's happening around the world with millions and millions of people demonstrating, pressuring their governments. Just yesterday, they blocked the San Francisco Bay Bridge area traffic, and this is unprecedented in San Francisco, coinciding with the APEC summit in San Francisco with China and the U.S. and everybody meeting there to try and consolidate some other hegemony in the for the U.S. in the Eastern Pacific areas. But anyways, we are seeing this backlash, and I don't know where it will go. A lot of it will depend on how much further Israel goes. Now starvation is setting in, and I can imagine what the reaction of the world will be as I actually literally observe live thousands of people dying of thirst and hunger. Thousands. What will the world do?
All right, sir. Pleasure to have you on. Thank you for joining us for this extended conversation. Stay safe, Mr. Mazin Kumsia, Palestinian scientist and author, joining us from occupied Bethlehem. That brings us to the conclusion of this news bulletin, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The blatant attempts by the U.S. government and the mainstream American media to parrot ridiculous Israeli lies about the ongoing genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip have seriously backfired. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the blatant attempts by the U.S. government have included projecting the occupying Zionist regime that has wreaked havoc in the densely populated coastal territory of 2.2 million people since October 7th as victims. However, Americans have refused to fall into trap this time, coming out in large numbers in different states, including Washington, D.C., to express solidarity with Palestinians and condemn the Zionist regime. One of the largest pro-Palestine rallies was witnessed recently in the American capital city, which came amid reports of growing divisions over the Gaza war within the ruling Democratic Party. The massive protest against the Zionist regime's genocidal attacks against Palestinians in the besieged strip and Washington's continued support for the Zionist regime and its pledge to give $14 billion more in military aid brought together over 150,000 people of diverse faiths and nationalities from across the U.S. It is widely agreed that the massive show of support by people who are angered by the carnage of mostly Palestinian women and children in Gaza was a direct outcome of the propaganda campaign orchestrated by U.S. officials and media in a bid to whitewash the Zionist regime's war crimes. The official pro-Israel publicity campaign and declaration of all-out support for Tel Aviv's war machine came in the face of widely shared accounts and documented evidence on social media platforms of indiscriminate bombings and other war crimes perpetrated by the Zionist regime against Gazans. While the state-sponsored American media outlets conveniently ignored or censored previously held protest rallies against Gaza genocide in major cities across the U.S., ignoring the latest and unarguably unprecedented pro-Palestine demonstration in D.C. wasn't possible. Pro-Palestine protests have also been reported in other U.S. states, including California, New York, Ohio, Utah, Michigan, and Pennsylvania in recent weeks. Such tremendous outpouring of support for Palestine has come despite attempts by a massive network of pro-Israel lobby groups and propaganda institutions across the U.S. to identify and blacklist the demonstrators as anti-Semitic, which would result in their potential dismissal from jobs. Protest organizers in Washington had cautioned the participants after media reports that students in New York saw their job offers being revoked for taking part in pro-Palestinian events and rallies. The state of New York is home to the largest population of Zionist Jews in the U.S. who share close ties with the Israeli regime and hold dual citizenship of the occupying entity. The remarkable show of support for Palestine in a country that officially prides itself on its unreserved support for the apartheid Israeli regime comes amid reports of growing divisions among politicians and lawmakers affiliated with the ruling Democratic Party. The divisions have been fueled by Joe Biden administration's all-out push to defend and justify the ongoing genocide in Gaza by the Zionist regime. One of the oft-repeated slogans during the recent protest march referred to U.S. President Joe Biden as Genocide Joe. This is while the pro-Israel news outlet Axios, seen by many as affiliated with the ruling party, reported recently that Biden's political team is in turmoil over the regime's war with Hamas resistance group. Infighting is spreading slowly but meaningfully at every layer of the Democratic Party over Biden's full-throated support of Israel, the outlet reported recently, insisting that it runs much deeper than college campus protests or scathing remarks uttered by elected officials. pro-Palestinian Democrats, it conceded, are outraged at the persisting carnage in Gaza and believe that it has been facilitated by Biden's open support for the Tel Aviv regime. Many liberal Jews, on the other hand, are furious that so many progressive Democrats aren't more outraged by the unprecedented Hamas operation that inflicted heavy losses on the Israeli military, threatening to leave the party. The report further pointed out that nearly 20% of the 300 employees of the Democratic National Committee, DNC, have signed a letter calling on their boss, Biden, to demand a ceasefire. Additionally, a U.S. State Department Foreign Affairs officer sent a massive internal email to organize a dissent cable on the administration's Israel policy, insisting in a social media post that Biden is complicit in genocide in Gaza. Day after day, the report emphasized more Democrats in the House of Representatives are expressing growing concerns over Biden's pro-Israel policy and slamming Tel Aviv's aggression against Gaza. The report went on to describe Biden's war planning team as pro-Israel across the board, but hastened to caution that top Biden administration officials know their own party decidedly does not favor the Tel Aviv regime and remain deeply divided over Israel's leadership and Gaza strategy. The hasty move by the Biden administration and the U.S. corporate media empire to openly back and justify the brutal Israeli regime terrorism against the defenseless civilian population in Gaza is a blunder that is already backfiring. It will ultimately expose the true and historic nature of the U.S. foreign policy in perpetrating and justifying military aggressions, foreign interference, war crimes, and racism across the world. By all indications, Biden stands no chance to return to office in 2024 amid growing divisions within the ruling party and enormous dissatisfied voters who regret casting their ballot for a deceptive politician. The mainstream U.S. propaganda machine will also continue to lose audiences amid rising awareness among the masses who are now relying more on alternative sources to obtain reliable information. According to Crescent International, Ross Siegel, Associate Professor of Genocide Studies at Stockton University in New Jersey, asserts the Zionist regime's assault on Gaza is a textbook case of genocide unfolding in front of our eyes. He views the enablers of Israel's genocide as partners in crime. Leading the pack of the Zionist regime's enablers is first and foremost the U.S. that finances and arms the Zionist regime. America also provides political and diplomatic cover to Israel and has repeatedly used its veto power to block censure of the Zionist entity at the United Nations Security Council. Other regimes include Britain, France, Germany, and a host of others in Europe as well as Canada. These rulers are complicit in Israeli regime war crimes and also liable. They will be held accountable for their support for the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
More blood of innocent Palestinians being shed in Gaza, which the UN has called a graveyard for kids. Al-Shifa Hospital has been encircled by Israeli forces, with Tel Aviv insisting Palestinian fighters are present in the area, while Hamas denies the claim as lie and asked the UN to visit the place firsthand to prove the claim is wrong. Now, people seeking shelter in schools and hospitals that are now being directly hit by Israeli forces, U.S.-made bombs and missiles. Meantime, Yemen's Ansarullah leader has criticized some Arab leaders for a lack of effective action. At the same time, people around the world keep condemning the Israeli crimes and urging their leaders to do something about the genocide in Gaza. Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Let's see who's joining us in this episode of The Spotlight. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press, is joining me from Moscow. Also with us is Shabir Rizvi, political commentator in Chicago. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Now, beginning with you, Ali, why do we see what some Hamas leaders and also especially this Yemen Ansarullah leader calling more serious and effective action from Latin American countries instead of Arab and Muslim countries regarding what Israeli forces are doing in Gaza?
It's obvious that from recent events, the Gulf Arab monarchies, which have been installed in place by the British since maybe 100 or more years ago, they've essentially used their American-made Patriot missiles and other systems to block the various retaliatory strikes coming from Yemen in support of the Palestinians. Now, if these regimes were truly in support of the Palestinians, as they may give lip service to here and again, why is it their business to block those missiles? So just goes to show that these regimes are absolutely in the pockets of the Zionist regime, of the American regime, and therefore the various countries, as you mentioned, in Latin America or elsewhere, their hearts, even though their kilometer distance mm-hmm. is much greater than the Gulf regimes, they're still more on the side of truth, and they're able to take greater steps towards actually supporting Palestine, not just in lip service, but in actual action. There have been a few Latin American countries, the exact ones slipped my mind, the viewers can look it up themselves, mm-hmm. but they've actually expelled the Israeli ambassadors from their country. This is a much greater and much more significant step than anything the Zionist puppet regimes in the Arabian Peninsula have done in this past few weeks.
Right. Shabir, let me ask you your opinion. How do you look at this? I mean, what did the deal of the century bring to those Arab states that normalized their ties with the Tel Aviv regime? Shouldn't they start backtracking from that deal that only envisages the Israeli interests?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, the deal of the century was created on the behest of the Israeli regime. It was, created by the Donald Trump administration here in the United States. But I think all this to say, these countries that are clearly doing nothing for the Palestinian cause, meanwhile, you have, countries from Latin America, countries from Africa even, from the Far East, kind of aligning themselves with the Palestinian cause. I think this is all really showing the world each country's orientation to where they stand against or with the side of imperialism. And there are certain countries that, are post-colonial, we'll say, or recovering from colonialism, but essentially they have comprador regimes that act on behalf of U.S. imperial interests. And, those countries we can include in the deal of the century where, they cut a deal essentially to sign away their actual individual sovereignty in favor of being part of the U.S.-aligned economic movement, which is, the movement of imperialism. Now, other countries, as we have seen in Latin America, reject that because, as we know, Latin America has a long history of suffering from colonialism, and now they're in right. what I call, post-colonial recovery. So it's obvious to see that these countries would be, vehemently against Zionism, which is a settler colonial project. And it's easy to see where they're coming from when they outright reject and actually make substantial moves towards, getting Israelis out of their own country, expelling them, breaking off ties. We might even see some, cuts with ties economically. And so this all this to say is that the deal of the century was, a capitulation to the imperialistic powers.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ali, let's now talk about the U.S. role in this. There is this clear contradiction that you see between their words and deeds. They say, we don't want to see what's going on in Gaza. Why are hospitals hit? And the funny thing is, the hospitals are hit, and some of those residential buildings, by U.S.-made weapons like Hellfire. Just yesterday, we were reporting it. I mean, there is no justification for this. You cannot square off. You say something, you do something else. Does America really want people in Gaza and their sufferings to be alleviated? Do they care about peace and tranquility in this part of the world at all?
No, they don't. They don't care about the people of Gaza. It's just the way to take the blame and the guilt of all this bloodshed, which is very easy for the world to see. Sleepy Joe Biden, as many call him, he repeated the very absurd and ridiculous claim, an evidence-less claim, that Hamas beheaded 40 babies when there was no proof. But there's proof every single day of a child being killed, of a baby being killed, even babies being killed before they are born, or premature babies dying because of the situation in the hospitals with a lack of access to the most basic of medical supplies. This is something that is at the hands of the regime in the U.S., and they have always been kind of co-partners, the American imperialists and the Zionists. They have a very similar supremacist ideology, that they are the superior people of the world and everyone else is inferior, and all kinds of crimes can be justified because of it. There's a huge connection between the various powerful Zionist families of Europe, such as the Rothschild family, and the founding fathers of the United States. So it's not like something that the U.S. Has only recently been a partner in crime with various Zionist groups. But it's been that way essentially since the beginning of the United States, and perhaps before it, because they were also doing similar crimes in the United States as perhaps a test run for how they would treat the rest of the world following the establishment of the American empire after the so-called American Revolution.
Okay. And Shabir, we have these admissions and some comments by Israeli ministers recently, you know, the one that started 2 weeks ago saying, actually likening Palestinians in Gaza to animals, the defense minister. And then we had the other one saying, why not nuke Gaza? What kind of war is this? Just nuke it and just let's get rid of this. And he was not satisfied. And then now we have also the finance minister saying that Palestinians, the only solution for them is to go find some other land for themselves. That's the solution. And then the other one saying that this is actually a Gaza Nakba 2023. I want to ask you your take on these.
I mean, the Zionist regime is making it perfectly clear that if they could get away with genocide, they 100% will. They're making it perfectly clear that their end goal here is the expulsion of all Palestinians from Palestinian land. They're making it perfectly clear here that any person that decides to get in their way, they will smear them, they will try to harass them into submitting into their, you know, this colonialist doctrine. And they're telling the world that, you know, if you're not with us, then we're going to create lies and we're going to lie right to your face in order to get you to be on our side. Otherwise, it's anti-Semitic, for example. Mm. And there's very few regimes now that are willing to back Israel. It's primarily the Western regimes, right? The United States, the EU, Australia. And the longer that they hold on to the Zionist occupation of Palestine, the longer that they try to defend the Zionist regime, they're delegitimizing themselves, because you have Zionists going on TV blatantly lying to our faces. Yesterday, a video came out with a Zionist soldier allegedly under a hospital saying that these are the names of terrorists that would be on guard over these hostages. And then if you look at if anyone can read Arabic in there, they would have told you that these are actually the days of the week, right? They're blatantly lying to our faces. They rely on the ignorance of the people in the West so that they can continue these genocidal crimes. They are 100% banking on people to be ignorant, primarily in the West. All their lies are catered towards a Western audience because they rely on Western media, they rely on Western weapons, they rely on Western political apparatuses to continue their genocide. And they don't care really what people that are in countries like Iran or China or anywhere that we would consider the global majority, really, because the global majority stands against Zionism. They don't really care about their opinion. They care about the opinions of the West, and they desperately need the West to stay alive, because if they didn't have the political backing of the West, if they didn't have the military backing of the West, primarily the United States, the Zionist regime would fall on its face in less than a minute.
Okay. Now, Ali, with this recent threat of using, you know, A-bomb in Gaza, isn't it time that Tel Aviv came clean about its nukes, you know, the only possessor of nuclear weapons in West Asia? Don't the countries in the region and beyond, do they feel threatened that they're saying that, hey, guys, why not use our bombs? So that means we are in possession of those bombs.
It has never really been as such a point in history where the Zionist regime is really showing their naked face as they are now, actually threatening to use their nuclear weapons. Now, they did have a plan to nuke Syria back during the 1970s, during the second war between occupation and the various Arab governments that are surrounding it. But they never went through with it, and I'm not exactly sure if it was made public or not, if it was leaked later. But this is the first instance where it's just, hey, we're going to brag about it, and we don't care, because really there's a lot of people in this world, as our guest was saying, that are waking up, that are awake, but there are also people that are very ignorant and clueless and easily buy into this propaganda. So the Zionist minister can literally threaten to use nuclear weapons, and they will justify it. And the most ironic thing is that these brainwashed and ignorant Westerners don't realize that while it's possible that the Zionists will use nuclear weapons against neighboring countries, it's also entirely possible that they'll use it against Western countries as well. And given that Netanyahu is basically saying, like, hey, if you don't support us, if you don't help us to win, there's going to be terrorist attacks in your countries, even though Hamas doesn't exercise terrorism as a tactic. Mm. It doesn't use civilians as a tactic, because military occupiers in Palestine are not civilians. In reality, groups like ISIS, who are really terrorists, groups like Al-Qaeda, who are really terrorists, are actually funded and financed and armed and created and everything micromanaged from the top to the bottom by the Zionist regime and the American intelligence apparatus. So in this case, Netanyahu is really slyly threatening the West with false flag terrorism blackmail. Now that can be something as small as a very small scale, like knife attack or gun attack. It could be something as large scale as a nuclear attack on the West, but instead of like directly claiming it and boasting about it, which maybe isn't within their capacity, but it might be more clever of them to essentially, I hope to God that never happens. That would be untold misery, but they would do that and they would blame it on Iran or Hamas, or these countries that don't believe in killing civilians, actually believe in defending civilians, and actually are the groups responsible for defeating ISIS terrorism. I think many people in the West don't know who are the real faces of the people who defeated ISIS. It's Hezbollah, it's Iran, it's Martyr Qasem Soleimani, it's the resistance groups in Iraq. It's all the groups that you're told to hate, but they're the ones who actually saved the skin of the West from a global terrorist organization that could easily go rogue against its masters and actually cause great harm to the West despite them being created by them.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Right, Shabir, different measures have been taken in reaction to all these crimes committed by Israeli forces, and one of them is actually encouraging boycotting of Israel-made products, and also stopping, like what Iran's leader advised, the sale of oil, for instance, and basic supplies and essentials to the regime. How effective would this be, and how badly would it hurt the Israeli economy?
I think a mass boycott that's led by all Islamic nations on anyone willing to do dealings with the Zionist regime is far past necessary at this point. It's kind of a shame that this region of the world has so much oil and so much to offer in terms of trade routes and sort of in terms of resources, in terms of labor, but they're not united enough to enact this embargo. I think an embargo, 7 days of an embargo would cripple Israel permanently. There would be no recovering from it. And if you pair that with the boycott movement that's led not only, you know, throughout the East, but also now in the West, as we see, and also just mass stoppages of weapons factories. If you're paying attention to what's happening in the United States, there have been coordinated efforts to shut down weapons factories such as Raytheon, such as Elbit Systems, such as Boeing. If you combine this, it's going to hit them where it hurts. And anybody knows that if you want to severely take down an entity, whether it be a political one, whether it be, you know, a country itself, you have to hit them in their economy. And the best way to do that right now is to enact an oil embargo, put on a full work stoppage. You also have to take into consideration, of course, Israelis don't live on occupied Palestine. So a lot of the workforce has already left. They went back to Europe. They went back to the United States. They went back to their second home in Brooklyn, or rather their first home, really. Mm-hmm. And they already are missing a severe amount of their workforce. You pair that with the fact that this aggression on Gaza is costing the Israeli entity hundreds of millions of dollars per day. They're actually asking the United States for billions more. This is going to make taxpayers especially angry, especially with a U.S. presidential election coming up. This is creating the conditions for a perfect storm to finally take down the Zionist entity. And if we don't act on this opportune moment right now, then we're going to regret it forever for the rest of history.
Now, Ali, given the circumstances and the situation on the ground, and do you see a war, the war spreading in the region, and a regional war looming despite all the warnings given by countries like Iran and others?
It's hard to tell, and God truly knows best, but the Zionist regime essentially will lose either way. If they were too cowardly to go into this very minor ground invasion into Gaza, where they're being humiliated despite their so-called superior technological capabilities and many other capabilities, they're not able to. You'd think they would be able to do it a piece of cake, a few days, but they're not able to handle it. So it will escalate into a regional war, according to what His Eminence Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, has stated, that basically if the resistance leadership and basically the like an existential threat to Gaza and its existence as a resistant remaining piece of what used to be Palestine, then of course it will escalate. And even then, it still has been escalating because basically, according to the Secretary General of Hezbollah, the presence of Hezbollah in the north, in the northern front, has been to divert some of the pressure and force that would have otherwise been directed onto Gaza. So they've been intensifying many of their strikes in proportion, it seems, with the invasion into Gaza. But it's either way, the Zionist regime is doomed and is going to lose. If it surrenders, then it's a humiliating defeat. But if it keeps going, the combined firepower of even just a couple of the resistance axis powers, let alone the entire combined forces, mm-hmm. would be enough to humiliate both the American forces in the region as well as the Zionist occupation. So I believe that whichever way the course of this onslaught and genocide goes, if certain resistance group deem certain red lines have been crossed and they intervene in order to stop this genocide, in order to finally eliminate this terroristic Zionist regime from power, then they will it will happen basically as the final war that this very blood-soaked occupation has ever fought in their entire existence.
Okay. Now, Shabir, what about justice? Which international tribunal is capable of trying the Israeli war criminals? Is it the ICC, the ICJ?
Yeah, I think as things stand, I don't trust any of these organizations to do anything because we are seeing a clear genocide happen right now. None of them have really stepped up to, you know, actually even enacting any charges on Benjamin Netanyahu at the very least. There has been nothing. These organizations are showing themselves to ultimately be puppets of the West, of the United States. And I think if we're looking for anything, any organization like that to get involved, it's going to be up to pressure from multiple countries to get those organizations to do anything. Because as we see it right now, you know, there's a child dying in Gaza every 10 minutes. And if we use Zionist media's own standards, right, they say they've killed maybe like, you know, a few dozen Hamas soldiers. That's hundreds of kids per Hamas soldier. And so to any standard, if this was Russia, if this was China, if this was Iran, the ICC would have already created the charges. They would have been alerted everybody else. And same with the UN. The UN won't even name who's killing their own volunteers in Gaza. They won't even say Israel. We cannot rely on these bodies to do anything. We can only rely on the resistance axis, which of course includes Hezbollah, which includes Iran, which includes, of course, the noble people of Yemen who are fighting the Zionists, even while facing a crisis of their own. I don't think we should leave it up to any of these international bodies to do anything. It should be up to the resistance themselves to carry out justice, and it will be up to the resistance themselves to free Palestine.
Okay, hopefully. All right, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of the Syria Press, joined me from Moscow, and Shabir Rizvi, political commentator from Chicago, with their insight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He was the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. He was the divinely appointed trustee. He was the divinely appointed rightful successor, and he was the divinely appointed Khalifatullah for the Muslims. We find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the only representative at the forefront of the opposition to the rule of the corrupt Abbasid caliphs. He was one of the prominent leaders of the Muslim Ummah who struggled against tyranny and oppression. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam took a brave and unwavering position against the tyrannical kings of his age. He did not associate with any of them. Rather, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam preferred to stay away from these tyrannical kings. And therefore, these kings held grudges and an enmity against Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, and they inflicted him with severity and violence, ultimately leading to the martyrdom of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Parts of Ziyara text of Jamaatul Kabira issued by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawilluha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal ma'rifah.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah.